Oh, we are so back.
Oh, we are so
back. We are so back. We were gone for a while, but yep. We are so back. Hello and welcome to Free to a Good Home. My name is Michael Hingan. Joining me this week, as always, is a man who I saw a photo of from maybe 10 years ago.
Yep.
And I realized you've lost quite a bit of weight. I was like, because I have never, maybe not 10 years ago, maybe like 8 years ago, but yeah. I've never thought of you as a guy whose weight fluctuates. I've always thought you was just Ben.
Yeah.
But I saw his friend. I was like, goodness, it could have just been a bad angle. But I was like, Ben looks so fit and healthy now.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Michael. I think since the last time we recorded this podcast, I've literally gone like considerably more grey, which is like, like these things happen very quickly and it'll come for you.
Yeah.
Oh, no, actually, it's been, is your father grey? Yeah. It's hard to tell because he has like crazy hair.
Yeah, he dyes his hair purple on account of mental illness, I imagine. But no, I've been going grey since I was in primary school.
Do you dye it?
There's individual grey strands that'll pop up from here to there. Now that I no longer work at Triple J, I don't have to dye my hair.
Yeah, you can grow a long flowing beard and start wearing robes around. And I want to say that we are back. And
it's been maybe a while.
I can't
5 months.
If we've done one since Arlo was born. I think we might have. But
sure. Arlo's a child.
Arlo's a child. He's a baby. He's a baby.
Yes.
He's 7 months old now. Eleanor Robertson, who hasn't been on this podcast but is a writer and she listens to this podcast, really rudely accosted me at a wedding the other day.
Oh, yeah?
Saying, you know, in not these words, but actually, no, in these words, put out another Free to a Good Home, you fuck. Or something like
sure,
that.
Sure.
And the annoying thing is, Michael, we'd already kind of agreed to do this by the time she said that.
Oh, yeah.
And now I kind of feel like I'm rewarding that behavior.
Yeah. Well, I think I can understand your concerns because it will only encourage people like Eleanor to find specifically Ben on the street. I guess yell at him, spit at him.
I don't think it works with you. So I think people know that the way to get this show made is to bother me. But it's great to be back. It's great to be back in your lovely house. You know, it's interesting. When I walked in here, and it's a fucking mess, man. Like,
well,
it is.
Yeah, it's an absolute. Well, we've not recovered from the wedding, frankly.
Well, this is my question.
Yeah.
Because I was at your wedding.
Sure.
And guess what?
What?
It wasn't here.
No. Like, but all of the pre-wedding events were.
Okay.
So the Mendy, where everyone does all the. Sorry, for listeners. Hello, I got married.
To hum.
And the pre-wedding events, which is the Mendy, where everyone does the henna.
Yeah.
The henna, like the temporary tattoo. Probably not temporary tattoos, but temporary tattoos.
Because you had a few. You had a few pre-wedding events.
You had
the Mendy, you had the Halud.
The Halud. We had to do a. And the Mendy was here. And then also everyone got ready here.
Sure.
And I won't show you upstairs, Ben, but upstairs there is just a room full of like silk robes.
Beautiful.
From all the various people and ones we didn't even use, just ones that aunties and friends and uncles have just given us in case we needed them for the wedding. Because I think the Bengali community just has extra silken robes that they just hand and they just cast around. And I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do with all these robes, Ben?
Sure. I was also at your Halud, which was a really delightful day.
That's like a turmeric ceremony where, for people who don't know, the bride and groom sit on a sofa or a throne, and you get turmeric. People get turmeric and come up and smear it on your skin.
Yeah, and then we give you a little treat.
And you got a fetus by hand.
Fetus by hand. It was really, really nice. But one of my favorite things about that day, well, there were two things.
Mm-hmm.
One was, it was very well organized in that like everybody got a number because it takes a while, right? Like,
oh, dude.
So, and this is the thing. So we were number like, I don't know, like 20 something or whatever, right? And you guys had been at it for an hour, getting fed little slices of like melon and turmeric smeared on you and all that. You were very turmeric-y by the time that we got to you.
Very
pungent. But anyway, like there was like a little break in the proceedings where like Tom Carty and Vic Zerps could sing a song and it was really beautiful. But like we realized, and you realized, I guess, at that point, that you'd gotten through like five fucking people. And it had been like an hour and a half maybe. And so by the time we got to you, it was great because like you were in full. Like when we used to run gigs at university, you were in that full mode. You were like, Anya, Moses, Ben, nice to see you. Sit here. Yeah, lovely.
Turmeric, sweet.
Smear. Does anybody? Okay, great. There's a camera there. Look at it. Great. Next. Who's next? Look at the number that you have. Because the gaps, the gaps between this is what's killing us.
It's so funny you mentioned that because I remember that slightly differently. Mm. I remember me being like, "Hey everyone, you've all got another like being super gentle." But like, I reckon since that was probably about a month ago now. I reckon maybe 4 or 5 people have been like, "Hey, dude, how was the halud? We had a great time. Are you okay?"
The second thing I loved about the halud was when we're on our way. Now, I'll wear that. Actually, part of this story is me getting something wrong, right? We're on the way to the halud. Moses was in the back. Oh, first of all, by the way.
It was in a lovely park, just so you know. It was
beautiful.
Yeah.
Mm. First of all, this is not relevant, but I'm just thinking about that car trip. Uh-huh. Moses really likes the Beatles right now, okay?
Well, what is it? Do you have a favorite? John, Paul,
well, this
George?
Is the thing, right?
Okay.
He's obsessed with how many people were in the Beatles, and he's also obsessed with like how many, who's singing each song, which made me realize like I have no fucking idea. Like I'm always like, that's definitely John, and then I listen to some more. I'm like,
is it? I mean, you know, Octopus's Garden is Ringo.
Actually,
obviously,
the other day we just had like Beatles number ones on a compilation or whatever, and Yellow Submarine came on, and from the back Mo was like, "This does not sound like the Beatles," and I was like, "Well, dude, that's interesting you say that because actually, like, Paul and John wrote most of the songs, but they let Ringo write this one, and he's singing this one too." And then after a gap, he listened to the song a little bit more and went, "Did he get in trouble?" Anyway, so we were driving to your lovely halud, mm-hmm. and Moses from the back seat just pipes up. Me and Anya in the front, and pipes up, and he goes, "Why?" I can't remember what song was playing, but it was a Beatles song. He's like, "Why did that man shoot John?" And I was like, "What?" And he was like, "Yeah, why'd that guy shoot John?" And I looked at Anya, and she was like, "Well, he asked me how John died." And I was like, because first of all, he asked if John was still alive. And then I said he wasn't. And then she said, "How did he die?" Because he's obsessed with how people died. So I told him that somebody shot him. And I was like, "Why the fuck did you do that? Like, we can lie to this kid." And then...
What would you have told him?
Oh, he just got... Buddy, you know what? We're going to listen to something else.
The mind of the improviser.
So I said to him, "Well, buddy, he shot John because he was really sick." He was like, "What do you mean? John was sick?" I was like, no. The guy, his name's Mark David Chapman. You're naming the killer.
Do you want 3 or 4-year-old son?
I was like, he was really sick. And he got so sick that he got confused and he shot John Lennon. And it was really sad. And Mo goes, Is that what happens when you get really sick?" I was like, "No, very rarely do you get so unwell that you shoot a beetle." But anyway, the other thing he asked, because I was already flustered, the other thing he asked was, after all this, he's like, "Where are we? What are we doing? Uh-huh. Like, where are we going?" And I was like, "We're going to Hamanhing's Halud." He's like, "What is that?" And I was like, "Well, it's like a thing that happens before a wedding." And I know now that it's like a Bengali thing.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a Muslim thing, right?
Right, okay.
So I said to him, it's like a ceremony, and it's like a Muslim ceremony where like people come, and I told him about the turmeric and stuff, and he was like, "Hang on, what's a Muslim?" And I was like, "For fuck's..." So again, I'd already done the John Lennon, David Chapman thing, and I was like, I don't have it in me, man. Like, so I was like, "You know how you're Jewish? It's like, well, it's actually not like that at all." historically,
they disagree quite a few things.
But like, it's like a religion or like an ethnicity. And he was like, "Who do I know that's Jewish? I mean, Muslim." And I was like, "Oh, great, yes. Hum is Muslim, and Shaq, she's Muslim, and little baby Frankie is Muslim." And he just goes, "Ah, okay," as if I'm the fucking idiot. He's like, "Ah, girls are Muslim." So we had a lovely time at your halud.
Well, here's the thing about getting fed by hand for 3 hours by 150 people or whatever
it was.
You
don't like germs.
Don't like germs. 3 days later, boy, did I get the sickest I've ever been.
Oh, really?
I got so fucking ill. And I mean, look, the week before that, I'd been at Splendor in the Grass, so who knows what I picked up and what was, at the time, pulsating through the Triple J offices.
Because you did have little toothpicks that we were meant to use, but did everybody use toothpicks?
Most people use toothpicks, but it's just like toothpicks, but it's just like someone feeding you in, like,
yeah,
it's just...
Yeah, your mouth's open, your hand's right there.
Yeah.
You're not made of stone, you're going to have a lick.
I got so sick, and so that weekend...
Well, you cancelled your own box.
Well, yeah, I mean... Yes, I didn't really want to have a bucks, and then some friends sort of
said
that you should.
Can I tell you, man? I suspected.
So in many ways, the sickness was a gift in many ways, because I got to cancel the bucks.
Yeah.
And then in the lead up to the wedding, I was quitting my job at Triple J.
Yeah.
And organizing a wedding.
Yeah.
And I was also flying to Melbourne every week to do the project.
Yeah.
I went insane.
You?
Yes. Well, I mean, not in a proper way. I didn't shoot John Lennon, but but because the wedding was in, our reception was in Chinatown, and so we had to pay for everything in cash. I was trying, and I
by the way, I would not have said that's a given, but that's fascinating to me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, there's some things going on there that the Australian government can't know about.
Forget about it here.
Yeah.
It's China.
And so I would often be taking out... Okay, so the wedding cost a lot of money.
Sure.
Had to pay for all in cash.
It was quite simply the biggest wedding I've ever been to in my entire life.
Well, a lot of that was family, Chinese family, you know, Bengali family, and then just like, you know, all of our friends and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, man, like this is an opportunity where we can just get everyone together and
it was the best.
And have fun.
It was amazing. It was one of those, like, I was talking to James Colley about it. And it was one of those weddings where it was like, you would look at Instagram afterwards and be like, oh, that person was there. Like,
yeah, and I didn't get to talk to everyone.
Yeah.
Anyway, so because I had to pay for the whole thing in cash, the first time I went to get out some money, which I haven't taken money out from the bank in 20 years,
yeah,
I don't know,
yeah.
Had to get out, I think it was like $7,000 for something.
Mm-hmm.
It was like for, I don't know, flowers or wine or
Jesus
whatever it is.
Christ.
You know,
okay.
What the fucking thing is. Some fucking thing. And the lady said to me at the bank teller, this is the George Street, St. George. She said to me, oh, you can take up, she goes, you know, you can take out up to $10,000 before we tell the police about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no, I just need this much. And she was like, you know, you can take out up to, right. So then the next couple of times when I was, that got in my head. Because I was like, so then if I ever had to take out more than $10,000, I was trying to take it out in $9,000 increments.
Yeah.
So that...
You know, like, this was a lot of Anya's work when she was working for the Banking Royal Commission.
Well, they also ask, if you take out more than $2,000, you've got to call them in advance.
Yeah.
And they've got... So this is what Anya achieved?
I think so. I think Anya was the one who made your life really difficult.
Great. No, it was fine. But they have to ask you what it's for.
Yeah.
Anyway... And so, because maybe they write down a book and whatever, and it's more than $10,000, they have to tell the police, which is understandable. There's crime going on, but
it's
it did.
Like, by the way, they call the police and the police come to your house. The police just like write it down somewhere.
Yeah. If it goes in everyone's big books.
Then goes.
So because I'm a bit paranoid, I was taking things out in $9,000 increments, and because of timing, because I was so busy with work, like we were going all around the country for our finale. We were like traveling a lot. I often would take money out from the bank just when I had a second. And then forgetting that I had to fly somewhere that night. So then there was a couple of times where I was like, multiple times where I was just flying to Melbourne with like $9,000 in a backpack, man.
Oh, wow.
And like putting that through security. Yeah. That's chill. That's very chill.
I guess.
And no one, there's no crime.
Yeah, there is no crime, is there? I mean, I think you should at least get roughed up for that.
No crime. But it made me very anxious the whole time.
Yeah, of course.
And that kind of wound its way into me. Just losing my mind before the wedding.
Can I tell you something, speaking of cash?
So yes.
You guys at your wedding had a wishing well that Simon Gray designed that was beautiful.
Oh, actually, can I tell you something about the wishing well?
Okay.
So, yes, we had a wishing well where people could leave a little envelope with some cash. And not that we... if anyone has ever been married, you never expect everyone to bring a gift because you don't know what people's circumstances are.
Sure.
And also, it's like when you're throwing a big party... There is part of it that's like, not that I've ever thought this, but I could see someone thinking, Well, if I have to, if you're paying for my dinner, then I've got to come and give you money.
Nobody in the entire world thinks like that. But
well, I'm just, like, I can imagine someone thinking
I can absolutely see you sitting there fuming at like,
not fuming,
at a mirror wedding like, to yours as the courses come out being like, well, that costs $30.
No, not like that. We're just like, well, if I could have just not come and then you wouldn't have had to buy a meal and I wouldn't have to give you money, we'll cancel this whole thing.
Yeah, there's almost like there's like another element there of like wanting somebody there to like celebrate.
which I understand.
You can't discount, of course, but you have. You've just completely.
Man, yeah. I think we've explained before that I have a lot of wedding trauma.
Sure.
So afterwards, a friend said to us, are you going to write thank you notes to everyone?
Yeah.
To get, and I was like, I hadn't even thought of that. I was like, of course we should. Of course we should. So the next, maybe the next day or the next couple of days, Hum and I went through the 300 odd envelopes that were there, and we messaged everyone who had given a gift and were like, thank you for coming. Thank you for celebrating with
us. That's great actually with cash because you can do like a form thing, right? Like, because you're not going to be like, thank you for X amount of cash.
Oh, no, I was like,
really?
Because everyone, everyone knows each other and stuff. And I was just, I don't know what Hum did because we split it up. But my one certainly, I tried to write them. No, I don't know with Hum. No, I tried to write them individually for people. I'm sure there were some jokes that came up again here and there.
But I remember like when we were doing that for our stuff because we didn't have a wish anymore. We just had like physical stuff.
Oh, you just had to be like, hey, thank you for the coffee maker. We'll use it to make. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, and after a while, you're like, thank you for the beautiful salad servers. Mm. They will be wonderful for serving salad. Like, now the elephant in the room here, Michael, is that when you went through that, you would not have found.
Well, hang on. Let me get to this bit. Okay, let me get to this. Okay. So I went through. Yes, and not that I had a list of everyone's names was marking them off.
Yeah.
But just because you are messaging people.
Yes.
You kind of are like, oh, there's some notable absences.
Yeah.
And then again, because my brain is, I think, brilliant.
Beautiful, yeah.
It's a beautiful mind.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, there's a couple of people who didn't give gifts and they are people who I'm like, I'm not surprised, it's totally
scum,
fine. Who cares?
Scum.
No, but it's like, I don't know your circumstance, whatever. You just can't. Also, if you came up from, if you like flew from Melbourne, whatever. Thank you for being there. But there was a couple of, I would say, notable absences from the inner circle.
Yeah.
Now, and then I was like, fuck, what do I do here? So Dave Harmon was an absence.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I then was like, I can't be like, hey, did you give me a gift?
Well, you
not?
Did because he did that
because,
to me.
Hang on, Ben, wait. Because I am on one hand.
Yeah.
I'm like, Dave, I don't want Dave to find out that everyone got a thank you note. Then he'd be like, why didn't he get a fucking thank you note? If he did give a gift.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right. I also was like, fuck, did someone put their hand into the lion's mouth and steal some cards.
Which Dave Harmon put his hand into the lion's
was
mouth.
There, was there a, was there a wedding heist?
Yeah.
Which everyone I've expressed this to has been like, what do you mean a wedding heist? What the fuck is wrong with you?
I'm but now you're saying that's a pretty fucking good idea.
Now, I eventually just left it with Dave and then Hum happened to go and visit them, mm-hmm. Dave and Jack, and they were like, we left this on the table. We're so sorry.
Yeah.
Here's a card. And over the course of 2 weeks, I would say every person in the inner circle who was missing has gotten in touch and said, oh, we left here. Of course we're giving you blah, blah, blah. Now, the only people from, I would say, my closest maybe 100 friends who attended the wedding and have not given a gift or anything. The only person...
Yep.
It's really you, Ben.
Sure.
So now, and I guess as a result, your family is represented by you in this instance.
See, I sort of feel like when you're having a wedding and you're throwing a party and you're paying for it and everything, like giving money is like, oh, why don't we just come? No.
But
what happened was,
I wasn't sure what to do with you because I was like, obviously, Ben is a close friend or a colleague or whatever.
Yes.
And I would I would not expect, but I'm like, it would be socially weird if he didn't give a gift.
Yes, exactly. So what happened was Anya came later because she was putting the boys down. Mm-hmm.
Not like a vet does. She putting them to bed.
And she came later. I thought she'd brought it. I actually thought she'd put it in the lion's mouth. And then through a comedy of errors, we realized that we hadn't. And I got in touch with... No, you got in touch with me and I was like, oh, yeah, by the way, this happened. I'm going to give it to you next time I see you. Now, this is the next time I've seen you.
Yeah.
I was leaving the house today.
Uh-huh.
And I had some money. And I was like... thinking about it. And I was like, outside of the beautiful ceremony uh-huh. with the lion's mouth that Simon Greiner made and popping it in there and everybody's doing it.
Yes.
Just rocking up to Hing's house with a wad of bills and handing them over to him feels really strange. So then I was like, I'll post it to him.
You're gonna post.
Well, I feel like I'm like bribing you to like.
Well, this is. I mean, what you've done now is this has become a podcast shakedown, and weirdly,
not the first podcast shakedown.
Weirdly, this is the second podcast shakedown.
I don't have any fucking cash on me, man. All right, you'll get your money. I'm gonna give it to Hum. I'm going to give it to Hum and like somehow make it that you personally cannot spend it.
There was actually, I reckon maybe three people who have directly either written checks to Hum or transferred money to Hum
with
that proviso
that's
saying
really
this is for you and not for Hing.
That's really smart. I wonder if that happens to like other people. Probably not. But it was a beautiful wedding. Which I went to for free.
I messaged you about this and I said, If you had decided not to give me a gift,
that would be fine.
It would have been fine.
Sounds like it probably wouldn't
because I don't know if you remember this, but I spent most of your wedding in my car playing video games.
Yeah, I do remember that. And you know, the thought did cross my mind, and crossed my mind this morning as well as I held that money in my hands.
And it feels like that won actually because you didn't.
Well, no, because again, I just felt it won. Look, you get it. I'm good for it, man. I'm good for it. The most interesting thing was how you arranged the tables.
Oh.
Because I knew a lot of thought would have gone into that. And it was a real, like, insight into the mind. Like, it was being seen. Because in a way, that's like...
I loved doing this.
Yeah.
So, when you're organizing a wedding, you get tables of, I don't know, however many, the venue tells you, right?
They go, hey,
10, 12, whatever it is. And so, you have very little wiggle room. And so, you've got to organize people into categories.
Yeah.
Or you've got to, like, find links between people. And then once you've just put people on the tables, then you've got to think about the order of people in the circle as well.
I thought
it was like fantasy football for conversation. I had so much fun doing this, which is again not a great reflection.
I think
on
you
me.
Balanced like me and Anya really well.
Interesting,
because there's not a crazy amount of crossover. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And I think you did that really, really well. I will say the funniest thing was that you had Craig Rucastle at your wedding. And I saw what you tried to do.
Yes.
Which was, because you also had Chaz invited.
Yes.
Who had RSVP'd that he was going to come.
Yes, yes.
And
Chaz got a bit ill, and so Chaz and his wife didn't come.
Yeah. So, but the idea was that you'd have, like, those three on a table together.
Yes.
So they could hang out.
Yes.
But when Chaz and Joss didn't turn up.
Yes.
Because Chaz got sick.
Yes.
What you had, which was like the table across from me, was Craig Rucastle and just some of the oldest Chinese people you can possibly imagine.
But they're all fans of The Chaser. And they were very excited to meet Craig.
That was great. And Alex Lee hosted. She crushed it.
Oh, she crushed. Who was on your table? Well, I think there would have been some former guests on the show.
Max Laverne.
He was a late call-up. So
was he?
That was because I'd done all the tables and I'd realized I'd miscalculated the invites or someone had cancelled or whatever.
Yeah.
So I had like maybe like three extra seats or something. And so I messaged Max.
Did you tell him or you have to?
It was like 3 weeks out and I was like, hey, cards on the table.
Yeah.
I made a maths error. There's a free meal if you want it.
Yeah.
And he came and it was
That's
great
lovely.
To see him.
And we had Simon Greiner and Briny.
Mm.
It was a real delightful evening. Tom Walker gave probably the best and most vicious best man speech I've ever heard.
It was. I mean, he was a man. He wasn't the best man.
Sorry. He was a man. It's funny. Actually, I was talking to Demi the other day. I'm emceeing their wedding.
They won't listen to this. Do you expect to get paid for that?
No, I don't. But I was interested because I heard that you paid Alex.
Well, that's a Chinese thing. Is if people help out the wedding, you're meant to give them like a little...
Okay.
You're meant to give them a red packet with cash. Actually, my parents, who were very helpful throughout all the wedding, we didn't really want to accept a lot of money from them because as soon as you take money from your parents,
yeah,
then they start feeling ownership of the thing. And
exactly.
Then,
you know,
And also then it becomes an arms race between the families.
Yeah, yeah.
So we kind of held off all of that for a long time until like maybe a week out. My mum was like, please let us do the red packets. Sure. So
okay.
So like people like Alex or, you know, Vic and Tom or whoever who like had done stuff for us and, you know, my friend Tia who DJed for a bit, you know, mum was like, I'll give them some money. And she was like, I was like, well, how much do you do? I don't know what you do. She's like, oh, I don't know. And then my mother went like full Lucille Bluth and was like, oh, I don't know. Is it like $1,000? I'm like, what are you talking about, mum? She's like, I don't know what it is. $40? Like, what are you
No, saying? You've gone too far the other way, mum.
And I think she quite generously, she landed on $300, which I think is a very generous.
I think
if I was... Someone
so had, do you think I should go to... Do you know what I can do?
Oh, no, well, here's the thing. That means my mum had to go to an ATM and just take out thousands of dollars of the cash. And then she's bundling it up into little $300 increments. And if you live in Sydney, Australia, you would know that $300 is about the going rate for a bag of cocaine. Mm-hmm. And so she was just like handing these out on the night to people. And she handed out most of them. I think I gave out a few as well. She handed out most of them. And I was like, this is going to be so quickly turned into drugs. Yeah. Mom, we don't.
The you know what I just realized I can do?
Yes.
I can go to Tom and Demi and I can say, so thrilled, blah, blah, blah. what an honor, blah, blah, blah. 300 smackaroos.
This is what, this is the going rate.
This is the going rate. 300 smackaroos, please. Give it to Hum.
If you could then, bypass us.
And then debts are settled.
The debt cycle. Interesting.
But no, did you have fun? Did you have fun at your own wedding? Because it's like people sometimes don't. And like...
Yeah, I mean, I had... this is a rare moment of sincerity for me. But I had a... it was nice to see... Robot map.
This should have been your speech.
It was nice. No, it was, I guess because you invite that many people, but you don't, there was about 300 and something people there and I hadn't, you sent out individual invites and it's not until you see everyone in the room that you're like, oh my goodness, this is so many people.
Yeah.
And it's so many, and then you kind of start to think, like every time you see something, you're like, oh my goodness, that person traveled from Melbourne and flew up and got a hotel or whatever, and that person's come from Bangladesh or China or whatever. Like, you know, people have flown in from lots of different places. Like, my sister came from Germany and her husband came from Germany. Like, it's just like, you're like, oh, my goodness, this is, like...
Yeah.
That was great. And then watching people make friends and have a wonderful night. And then also because there was quite a lot of booze at the wedding, because obviously it's a wedding, but also because I worked in bottle shops for so long and they just... frankly, stolen some stuff over the years.
Sure.
I put alcohol on all the tables.
Yeah, that was from your private stash.
Yeah,
right?
Just like bottles of scotch or whiskey or tequila or whatever. Yeah. And let me tell you, that really let people who want to, if you were there to tie one on, you could certainly tie one on.
Yeah,
you could really.
I think I left before it got, because we had a babysitter and we had to, so I think I left around like 10:30. But I remember thinking like, oh, there's a storm coming. Like,
well, it was a storm that came probably about maybe half an hour after you left, because we got kicked out of there around 11. And when you get kicked out of a Chinese restaurant, there is no like, hey guys, can you?
Yeah,
it's literally like lights to full brightness.
Yeah.
Literally people were on the dance floor and a guy came with a drill and started dismantling the dance floor underneath. And I'm like, ah, yes, my culture. It was like...
That's so good. Hey, do you know, you've obviously had some exciting news with your wedding. We have exciting news in that we were sent, you and I have exciting news. We were sent a packet of snacks.
Oh, snack report.
Yeah.
Before we do snack report, can I just do two things that I think would be two other little wedding details I think listeners would like to hear. One is that, as you mentioned, Tom gave an absolute crush of a speech that was one of the most brutal things I've ever heard.
Yeah.
I think you'll appreciate one line that Tom said, which was, Michael Hing is the strangest man I've ever met. And for those of you who don't know me, I spent 2 years at clown school. Just absolute crush. He also referred to me like a dog at some point.
Yeah, like a dog. Seeing you do things that you enjoy is like watching a dog eat its own vomit. It's like, well, it's basically fine, but ugh. I actually saw Tom in the bathroom before he gave that speech.
Oh, yeah.
I just said the shittiest thing to him. I didn't mean to. I was just being an asshole. He was like in the speech. It was in the bathroom, just like going over his cards.
Oh, because he'd written it out on palm cards.
And I was like, "How you doing, man?" And he was like, "Do you know what, man? I'm actually like, I never get nervous about this shit, but I'm really nervous about it." And I was like, "Well, you'll crush it." And then I like went to turn away, and as if thinking about something, I turned around and went, "Oh shit! Unless you don't." And then just walked out of the bathroom.
Also, the only other thing I want to mention from the wedding is my dad gave a speech.
Yes.
Now, he and Tom had not spoken at all. Yeah. I don't know if they'd have even met.
Yeah.
Maybe they've met like once in maybe, you know, the 20 years I've been friends with Tom.
Yeah.
But my dad just happened to give a similarly brutal speech about me.
Yeah.
That was basically like, Michael is a weird unit.
Yeah, I like when wedding speeches like kind of accidentally have like a leitmotif running through them. And this was definitely, oh, how beautiful does Hum look and how smart and great and what a fucking freak she's marrying.
I think Max Laverne, someone described it to me like I was on the floor and my dad was unloading a clip into my head.
Yeah, I was
just
seeing,
like bang, 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 bang.
Next to Max while he was watching it, and he was saying something similar. I went to a wedding a week after yours.
Yes.
Of a former guest on the show, James Hennessy.
Sure.
Beautiful wedding. Mm-hmm. And where I gave a speech and again, leitmotif, but it's a predictable leitmotif. Uh-huh. It was, you can probably guess it if you've ever seen James. James has an enormous rectangular head.
He does a huge head.
And so like a lot of people were making comments.
About
how big his head was. And just out of fucking nowhere, the father of the bride in like otherwise like quite a lovely and unassuming speech got onto the topic of James's great big head and just looked at him and went, yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A sniper's dream.
Real GoldenEye big head mode style.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything's a headshot. Now, you were saying, Ben, since we've been away, we've received a wonderful care package.
We do. From Meredith Russo.
Thank you, Meredith.
So much. I won't read her whole note because it's really long and really lovely, but long story short, she sent us two sorts of things. She sent us snacks for us to try on the podcast. And uh-huh. And I'm going to be honest, we're not going to get through these.
There's quite a few snacks. Bounty.
This episode, but it's good incentive to do some more episodes because we've certainly got enough snacks.
Okay.
From Meredith to do a few of these. She's also sent me some like gorgeous kids books that she's written.
Oh, she's this is Meredith the children's
yeah,
author.
Yeah. So
this one's called "There's a Yeti in My Tummy." Now that seems
dangerous. Meredith, that's preposterous. But it's really lovely. She writes books about like kids expressing their feelings, which I can tell you is a challenge.
But kids can't express it, or
they just like, you know what I mean? Like Mo will just like be around the house and there'll be something so clearly wrong. And he'd be like, "I feel funny, Dad." And I'll be like, "Well, let's talk about that, pal." And then like, we'll talk for like half an hour and I'll be like, "Oh, you're hungry." Like,
oh, sure. You know who's like that? Hamara Mab of a grown woman.
Or he'll be like, "Oh, it's like this feeling where like I blah blah blah," and he'll describe it for a long time. We'll be like, "Oh, you're frustrated, that's fine." You know what I mean? Like, so
yeah.
She's written this book called "There's a Yeti in My Tummy," and she sent it to me to read to Moses, and I cannot wait. It looks beautiful. So thank you so much for
that. Is your new child at an age where you can read to them? No.
Well, you do.
You do.
You do, because like they're 7 months old. Well, Arlo's 7 months old now, and I find that like he kind of likes just the attention and hearing my voice and looking at pictures and trying to put the book in his mouth, which he enjoys.
Classic book experience.
If I have one criticism, Meredith, Arlo cannot put this book in his mouth. It's
too big,
it's
too floppy.
Too big, too floppy.
Yeah.
I don't think the paper stock, even though it's very nice, I think that's just going to dissolve in a baby's mouth. But Moses is going to love this.
Oh, and this one's like a commercial one.
Yeah, this is IP.
Hot damn. This is a book from Meredith called Sweet Dreams Jack Jack, and it's from the Incredibles series.
And Meredith had no way of knowing this, and if she does, I'm concerned. But we call Arlo Jack Jack sometimes because he looks a lot like Jack Jack.
From the Incredibles.
So Moses is going to love that as well.
I wonder if, do you reckon this is probably licensed, or do you reckon this is...
Yeah, I reckon it is,
Or man. Do you reckon this is illegal?
I reckon it's probably on the level.
Okay, well, anyway, thank you, Meredith, these wonderful kids' books and children's books, what do you call them? And for the snackos...
And for the lovely note, we're going to try these snacks. Now, you've gotten something in
So, Meredith... Wait, did we say where Meredith is from?
She says these snacks are from a place near Vermont, so I'm imagining she's American. And she found the podcast by Googling funny podcast, so thank you.
Hell yeah. Ticonderoga, New York.
Yeah.
Which is right near Vermont. Oh, this is kind of funny. A friend of mine is, his wife, who I'm also friends with, is from she's from Vermont.
Yeah.
They came to the wedding, and they left a card that said, happy wedding, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Hope you'll really enjoy Vermont maple syrup as it's the best maple syrup in the world, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, that's a really funny thing to write on the card, just to have Vermont pride.
Yeah.
And whatever. Like, very nice, whatever.
Yeah.
4 days later, someone who was packing up for the wedding called us and was like, hey, did someone leave like 2 liters of Vermont maple syrup?
I'm very surprised that you didn't twig to that earlier, because a normal person would read that and be like, oh, they gave us maple syrup. This isn't some bizarre non sequitur.
Well, I just thought, I was like, Dave's pretty funny. I was like, Dave's just, it's just, Dave and Beth have just written a lovely thing about an ode to maple syrup.
Man, they've really taken up a lot of the card real estate on my wedding card talking about how good maple syrup is.
Okay, so this is Buck Mountain maple syrup, and these are what, maple syrup candies,
I guess?
Yeah,
it looks like they've taken maple syrup and like... solidified it in some way.
You know who else is a big fan of maple syrup?
Moses Cotton Jenkins?
Vermont maple syrup is the fictional president, President Bartlett.
He does like Vermont maple syrup, doesn't he?
He says it's... Oh, that is nice.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh.
Now, I'm going to try...
It's a caramel. It's a sort of a caramel treat, and it's frankly too sugary and sweet, and I cannot eat the second one of these because I will go into a coma.
Okay, well, I've got here something that you can't eat anyway.
Mm-hmm. What is this?
This is something that I think is going to really test the limits of my snacking.
Mm-hmm.
I think we may have found a rock so large that God can't lift it. it's called Oinks. And it's got an...
North America, you're incredible.
It's got an incredible slogan. The sweet and salty meat treat.
Mm-hmm.
So this is applewood smoked chocolate covered bacon.
Applewood smoked chocolate covered bacon. So they get a pig, kill the pig,
yeah.
Remove the bacon,
yeah.
Cook the bacon, then smoke it.
Cook the. Well, I don't know what order that happens is, but right. then they do the thing that you wouldn't expect, and they dip the bacon in
chocolate.
In chocolate.
Do you think they smoke the chocolate as well? Guess we'll never know.
I don't know.
Okay,
but
so this is Ben trying.
So what I've got here is like a bacon rasher.
Yeah.
But completely covered in chocolate.
Yes.
Yes. It's a bit... You know what it is? I almost called you Moses. Do you know what it is, Michael? It has the... right now, before I've tasted it,
mm-hmm.
it has the kind of consistency and weight of a curly whirly. You know what I mean? It's a thin...
Yes.
On account of how it's a rind of bacon.
Yes, yeah,
a
yeah.
A rasher of bacon.
Yes.
I'm just going to taste this now.
Now, this is... It's covered in a dark chocolate according to the ingredients. It also has... How many ingredients do you think are in a apple smoked chocolate covered bacon? Do you reckon what, like 4 ingredients?
Shut the fuck up.
Turns out it's 45 ingredients. Look at that list of ingredients.
Can I just say though,
yeah.
They're all working in some sort of symphony.
Oh yeah, you're
I really did not expect to enjoy this.
You're enjoying the chocolate covered bacon?
I really...
You're enjoying the sodium phosphate, the sodium enthobate?
Mm-hmm. I can really, it really pops.
Yeah, the hydrogenated palm kernels, cottonseed oils, glycerol.
That is...
Glycerol?
Fuck, that's good.
Yeah?
I mean, I can't eat it all, even me, but...
Thank you, Meredith.
Kicked out of the park.
And look, I imagine that Meredith has sent these nicely with a sort of a, hey, what a nice gift. But I imagine also she wanted us to plug her books, so...
Well, no, I didn't think so.
No?
Well,
she's included the books, and they're a nice gift, but we should say as well, again, it's called There Is a Yeti in My Tummy.
Yep.
And that's by Meredith Russo, and it's about feelings. And the other one is Sweet Dreams, Jack.
And also, she's got a Toy Story one, Socks on a Mission. So,
hot damn.
If you have children, or if you're just a bit weird.
Oh, Sorry, just another snack report thing.
Yeah.
Is a gentleman who I guess probably doesn't want to be named. This is months ago now.
Mm.
Not accosted me, but found me after a comedy festival show I did and was like, he's like a guy who's, he's a person who's a Dragon Friends fan and we know this person.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and is, I should say, is harmless. You know what I mean?
Sure. This isn't your, this isn't your,
this isn't one of Chapman. The, this isn't, they found me after the show and very kindly gave me some snacks, including some kimchi that they had made, fermented kimchi in a lid. And they said to me, good luck getting this back to Sydney. I don't know how tightly sealed the vacuum seal is on this.
Beautiful.
And I said, okay, great. So I put all those snacks in like three layers of plastic, put them in my suitcase.
Yep.
And boy, howdy, did that explode.
Oh my God.
On the fly. I don't know if maybe in the air, the water inside froze and then I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
But like I opened my, and again, not your fault because you did warn me when I got back to Sydney, my three layers of plastic bags, still my suitcase was filled with shards of glass and
Jesus
kimchi
Christ.
And
do you know what I would have done?
Juice.
In that situation,
yes.
If someone had handed me what they had warned me was essentially
a bomb,
a cabbage grenade,
I was then to take on a plane.
Yeah, I probably would have just left that bad boy in Melbourne.
Well, anyway, thank you to that person as well. It was a very kind gift that I really messed up. Otherwise, how was I meant to transport it? You know,
that's true. But you're jobless now.
I have left Triple J.
How does that feel?
Honestly, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I have had full night's sleep for like 3 weeks now.
That must be a delight.
Oh, it's wonderful. It is so wonderful. Like there were times when,
because I don't think you don't strike me in the fuck. Do you know it's almost been 20 years that we've known each other?
It's crazy. Crazy.
Like in that time, you've never really struck me as someone who likes to sit still.
No, that's true. I love to be busy and do and you know. Fill my life with as much work as possible. But so I left Triple J maybe 3 weeks ago. And then since then, I had 1 week where I was playing the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had 1 week where I was down in Melbourne doing a podcast. And now this is my first week properly off since leaving Triple J. And obviously, I love that job. It was such a wonderful time, 3.5 years I spent there. But, you know, like a lot of jobs, it is, you get as, you can be as big as small as you want.
Yeah,
I think because Lewis and I, it's my radio partner, Lewis Hobber, always thought, honestly felt that each year was the last year we were going to do it. So we were always just like, oh, we've got to do something crazy because it's our last year. And so each year we were just trying to top the last year. And for weird reasons, we'd always stay on.
Mm-hmm.
It just meant by the end of 3.5 years, I was like flying everywhere and like doing as many, like in the last, like,
I think you have to, I mean, I think you and I are similar in this way. Like what is the point?
Exactly. Like, why would you have that job if you just want to like what's the point of having an incredible audience of wonderful people if you just want to like
especially
talk about the jokes of the new like the day's news kind of thing
especially
every day.
With the ABC because it's not like you're getting like house money at like you,
exactly,
you have to do it because it interests you and you love it. And
totally.
You're so constantly trying to do something different.
In like the last like, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks, like, you know, I was at Splendor and then we like got statues made and then we went to Cockington Green to do like a
biggest
show.
Yeah, those statues were horrifying.
That was so bad.
Yeah.
But the guy made them in like, I don't know, like 48 hours. So like good on
him. Yeah.
We got them put in Newcastle and now Lewis and I are doing this tour. Anyway, it was just a really big couple of weeks. So I'm really glad to be done with that. But now I'm like, I can sleep. I have ideas.
Yeah, you can take up a weird hobby.
I don't have to churn things immediately into radio
You've
content.
You've got that lovely, is it a Sony? Is it a Nikon? That camera?
Oh, the camera?
You could take up photography like me.
Oh, sure.
We could be photo buddies.
Maybe I'll have a family now, Ben. I'll be just like Ben.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll have a family. No, I'll probably play video games and get competitive. There's a new Warcraft game I've started playing on my phone, which is quite fun.
Yeah, great. Well, that's
but you've also been changing your career slightly.
You look relaxed, by the way. Which
thank
is
you. It's
you look more relaxed
wonderful.
Than you did at the Hulu.
Who's number? All right, who's next? Sit down. Look at the camera.
If you can
feed me a treat.
If you can work it out in a fucking chicken shop, you can work it out here, people. No, I have. I've had a. So I'm working at this production company part time.
Mm-hmm.
Which had always been the plan, because I was looking after Arlo 2 days a week.
And for people who aren't across Australian television, this is not like a scam production company. This is like a proper television production company that's made. I looked at their website. Some of the biggest shows.
They made big stuff. They have.
In some of the biggest shows in Australia.
They're new. They're like.
Oh, well, the guy who runs it is a fucking legend of the game.
Yeah. And so I've been on there as like a kind of development guy, developing projects and stuff. And it's been really fun. And I'm still doing that. But exciting news, potentially for me and only me. I'd been coming home from work. And I love my job, but there is something funny about it, which is like, I'm so used to, like 10 years in TV, I'm really used to just getting a phone call and someone being like, you want to make a thing? And then just like turning up every day and making that thing.
Yes.
All the stuff that happens before that, not privy to.
Right. The development, the pitching, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And especially the pitching. So like my job right now is like, on the one hand, really exciting because like, I'm talking to like really great writers and like people who have great ideas, and I'm helping them get it together as a pitch deck, and then working out who to pitch it to, and like having those relationships and all that. But like, it is not to put too fine a point in that. Like, it's a kind of creative edging. You know what I mean? Because you,
I think you're
just kind of sitting there being like, let me write the thing.
Yeah,
Or let this person write the thing.
And it's a different. I would, in my limited experience, I think selling a TV show is a very different skill set to making a TV show.
Very much so.
And they're related, but often the thing that you, like often what you're doing when you're selling a show is finding out what the gap in the market is or what the network needs or something that is never the best way to start a creative process.
Yeah, and actually, I actually know very few people who, there are people who are good at both of those things, but I actually know very few of them. And like, perhaps arrogantly, when I was offered this job,
like, Megan,
my whole thing was like, great, I'm going to become someone who's good at both of those things.
Yeah.
And then I will become unstoppable.
You know what it's like? It's like, you know how there's like a kind of theater or comedy performer, and you're like, how are they still doing this after 30 years? And you just realize they're really good at writing grants, grant applications.
Yes.
It's the same thing. And you're like, you like go away, watch their show, and you're like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
And then next year, and it's always the highest production values. You're like, this, and they've been doing this for 30 years.
Yeah.
And it's just that they are a fucking gun grant at machine. Writing grant applications.
So I was doing that, but I was like coming home just like, frustrated because they didn't have an output. So I started writing a book after we'd put the boys down.
Now, is this like a manifesto or something?
Yeah, sort of like
a book about your struggle.
A list of demands in many ways. I started writing this a fiction book when we'd put the boys down, and Anya would be working on her briefs, and I...
That's interesting. So you were shamed into writing a book because your wife was working long hours. That is an interesting insight into your home life.
That is certainly one way of looking at it. Anyway, so I wrote it for like a little while.
Man, are you playing Switch again? No, I'm...
I did that for like a month and started to really, really enjoy it and really enjoy the story. And like, I don't know, probably like 3 weeks ago, I sold it to like a proper publisher.
Hot damn.
Who's bought it.
So wait, just can we backpedal a bit? I know some details, but are we allowed to talk about any of the...
Like what the book's about?
Yeah.
Of course we are.
So it's a fictional book that has links to sort of historical reality.
Yeah, so like for international listeners, there's this period in the 80s in Australia, especially in Sydney, but also in Queensland and parts of Melbourne and kind of all over really, but mainly East Coast, that I kind of love because it's kind of bonkers when like New South Wales, the city that you and I live in New South Wales, Sydney, was like one of the most corrupt places in the Western world.
Well, before like... Basically, before 1995 in Australia, if you were pretty rich, you could do whatever crimes you wanted and basically get away with it.
Yeah, so like, and it comes down to like an incredibly corrupt culture in the New South Wales.
The government was corrupt. The cops were corrupt. I mean, not all of them, obviously.
The magistrates were corrupt.
But like, everyone was being bought and sold.
The story that like really made me want to write this book was... Nettie Smith, who was a real person and an absolute monster. He was like a standover man, a pimp. He got into drug importation in the mid-80s too. But in the early 80s, he was just an extremely violent stick-up man, essentially. And he tells a story in his own autobiography, which, by the way, like, do not pick up. Like, it is 80% lies. And unless you're writing a book about this period, there is no point reading it.
You're saying a criminal... wrote a book that was full of lies.
I know, right?
Thought the New Yorker fact checkers didn't get on that one. Or?
What's interesting is, like, he's such a fucking idiot
right.
that, like, his lie, you can tell when he's lying, even in print. Mm-hmm. Like, his voice print sounds suspicious
yeah.
when he writes. Anyway, he tells a story, which I've since managed to verify, that, like, in 79 or so, he was he went to a nightclub in Glebe. Which, for people who live in Sydney, it's very funny to imagine a nightclub in Glebe.
That's there was crazy. Yeah.
He calls it a disco. He went there with his wife.
Ah.
And they sat down and got drinks. And he saw across the room a table of men who had, at some point in the distant past, beat up Nettie Smith. For what I assume were very good reasons.
And that's
right?
him. So he sees some people who have beat him up.
Yeah.
In
and he says to his wife, darling, wait there.
Or at the discotheque.
Wait and mind our drinks. I've just got to get something from the car. Uh-huh. And so he leaves the discotheque. What it transpires was in his car, for reasons that no one's been able to explain to me, was an axe. And he takes the axe, walks back into the club, and just goes to town on these fellows with an axe, while his wife's like, Nettie!
Fuck!
So he cuts them and beats them, puts two of them in the hospital, before finally being like, yeah, we should go. And on the way home, apparently, his wife's like, I'm never going dancing with you again. So this is like something that... At any other time in history, I feel, or at least in the last kind of, you know, whatever, would be the sort of thing that would mean that you would probably go to jail for a considerable amount of time.
Yes, yes.
The next day, Nettie Smith gets a call from a Balmain cop who's like, Nettie, mate. Nettie.
What buddy, have you done? What have you,
yeah, silly Billy. Meet me at the pub, bring me $15,000. And that's fucking it. Nettie Smith would be in jail like 6 months later for amazingly not that.
That's crazy.
So that went away. So like I find that whole period fascinating and like weirdly funny.
Uh-huh.
And so the novel is set against that backdrop of real people. Mm-hmm. In 1981, something quite famous in Australia happened where a cop whose real name was Roger Rogerson, shot a criminal or a sort of low-level drug dealer in broad daylight in Chippendale, just down the road from where we are. And that kind of set off a chain of events that would sort of probably lead to the Wood Commission in the 90s and then. But that story's been told a number of times, most famously on a TV show from the 90s called Blue Murder. And I love the story. I think it's great. I wanted to write a book about two brothers who I've made up who are very, very low on the pecking order. Just two. One of them's an ex-boxer. One of them's a dipshit thief. Just sort of going about their own business while the Lanfranchi Rogerson thing is kind of happening in the background.
Okay.
So they kind of weave in and out of history. And
so it's like, can I, because obviously.
You can do it.
This is, people listening to this are interested in Ben Jenkins.
Sure.
Right? They're interested in knowing what you're up to.
Uh-huh.
They're fans. They're Jenkins heads.
Uh-huh.
Right. When you go out to sell this book, because half the book is writing the book and then half the book is selling the book, right?
Yep.
When you go out, you're going to need to like, distill this down into like a 5-second pitch.
Yep.
Here's.
Can I, before you tell you yours, can I tell you mine? Buy it for your dad who you don't know that well.
Okay. Well, mine was going to be, so it's like, it's fictional against history.
Yeah.
I'd be like, it's Forrest Gump.
Okay.
It's Forrest Gump, but Australian crime.
That's interesting because my publisher has already called it Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, which is a much higher brow reference than Forrest Gump.
But Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, don't they just sort of ask each other a bunch of questions?
Well, it's sort of like Hamlet is happening in the wings of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. You know what I mean?
Yes,
like
I see. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
But yours is good too.
Well, like I mean, Robert Zemeckis what is Gump but Hamlet reimagined?
I think that's untrue, but I think they're, you know what that is, Michael? That's some words you've said in an order.
Good night, sweet Jenny. Is there anything in that?
I think there's a bit of that. So I've written, it's due, like the first manuscript is due like by Christmas, which is like fairly tight.
So how many words does a book have to be? These are all the questions that people are thinking right now. Who have not just never written a book, but never read a book.
Sure.
How many words are in a book?
I think this book's going to come in at about 80,000.
80,000
words. 80,000 is about right.
And so between, and when you got it, December, you got a...
December the...
And how many, this is very university essay style questions. So how many have you written so far?
25,000.
And so you've got another, 65,000 words to write, something like that, or 50,000, 60,000.
Yeah, no, wait, 20,000. I've written 25%.
Okay.
So I now have, with the advance, we're now like kind of able to, those 2 days that I was looking
How does that work? So they give you some cash just to write the book. before you give them a couple of sample chapters, then they give you some cash. And so it doesn't even, so if your book, and I sincerely hope it's not, but just say your book's a fucking bomb.
Yeah, you don't have to give that back.
Zero, you get to keep it.
You get to keep it.
What if you don't finish the book? Then what if the last, say, 60,000 words are screw Flanders?
That's how they get you, because they only give you half the money at first, and then when you submit your 80,000 words, they give you the rest. But yeah, you know, if the book flops, you do get to keep that money.
And if so, you just have to, so all you've got, because all you've got to do,
all I've got to do is turn in,
is write the book.
Yeah,
all you've got to do is write the book. They've got to do all the marketing and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Hot damn! Yeah. So do you have a title for the book?
I do, but I don't want to say
Mr. Jenkins's Big Suck Off Adventure.
Well, you've said it now, so thanks a lot. No, I don't want to say because I think it'll change, but I do have a title. Me and my publisher are happy with the title, and it's not going to be out for a fucking long time, though. I tell you that much for free.
So you write it for the end of this year?
I write it for the end of this year.
Then it goes into, what, an editor or something?
We do an edit for the next 6 months, so first half of next year. Probably, hopefully won't take that long, but we allowed for that amount of time. And then it goes to, like, market before it gets printed, so like goes to like the retailers and stuff to see who's
before it gets printed. Oh, you send them like an Officeworks print or something.
No, you do print up a version of it.
Right.
Like,
okay.
I actually think this is what Meredith has sent.
Oh, galley copy. It's written there.
So you do have a number of copies to send to like buyers and stuff, and then you see if like Dimmicks is going to buy it. If Big W is going to buy it or whatever.
I got sent. A person who's been on this podcast wrote a book in the last couple of years.
Yeah,
and they sent a pre-market version of their book that they'd written to Triple J. I got one, and Lewis got one. And mine was signed with a lovely note that said like, "Hey, look, if you like, we'd love to come on the show and talk about it. Blah blah blah. Here's my memoir. Blah blah blah."
Yeah.
Lewis's one was not signed at all. And so I was like, lol, this is funny. Clearly I'm the favorite here. And so we had this person, I thought it was like a funny joke. We had this person on to then talk about the book. First question, Lewis is like, why did he get a signed copy? Why did he go? They were like,
Yeah, I don't think they would have been prepped for that by their publisher. So yeah, I think it'll be out like either end of 2024 or start of 2025.
No, you got to get end of 2024. Christmas. What are you talking about?
No, and this is like the interesting thing, and like this is why I quite like my publisher, because she was like very, she's very direct.
Yeah.
Because I was like, Christmas, people love Christmas, and she was like, yeah, for Christmas, people tend to go with like authors that they know.
Oh. Like,
you don't want to be competing against like
J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yeah, exactly. If that fucker drops another book when mine comes out, I'm toast.
Do you read books?
What the fuck are you talking about?
I gave up reading 3 years ago, Ben.
Okay.
And I might.
It would mean a lot to me if you would read my book when it comes out.
Occasionally, I have to read a book for work, although I don't anymore because I don't work.
You just see if they signed it.
Exactly, and then read the message at the front. Yeah. All right, tick.
That's
I will potentially lift my ban for your book. When do you know the author? Do you know the names in your head of the authors you're competing against? Like, who are doing similar things to you? Like, vaguely.
Are you going to go egg their house if I
criminal,
tell you?
Criminal.
I mean, because this is like crime and almost like true crimey sort of. It'll probably
it's true
be
crime adjacent. Yeah,
yeah. It's a lot of houses to egg. Let me tell you that much. But you don't really know like who you like. The publisher gave me like some comparisons when she bought the book, being like, "Oh, it's this meets this meets this," which I was very used to working in TV.
Like, that's the
kind of language you use. Yeah. And there were a few names there that I was like quite surprised by. J.R.R. Tolkien was one of them.
And so now...
Do you know, I actually had an idea as I was drifting off to sleep last night, because now I'm thinking about like, oh shit, it's going to be real. It's going to be a book. I've got to like think about certain things that I thought it would be really funny to have like, you know, to have at the start of this book, like dedication, and then like a map of like a castle or something. like you never reference again, but it's like, yeah, this is... Or like the land of Gwadwar. And
extremely fun. Well, congratulations on getting a book deal.
Thank you.
Are you the first Oh, no, we've had a couple of other authors on the show.
Yeah, we've had...
Max Laverne had that book. John Morris is bringing a comic book.
I'm scum. I'm very Johnny Cunningham lately, but it's exciting, and I'll let you know when it's done. What,
do you reckon, voice-wise,
yeah, mate,
is it going to be hard to read or is it going to be an easy read? Like, are you told to write it for, like, dum-dums or...
No, I haven't been told to curb anything, which makes me think I might already write for dum-dums without meaning to.
Like, do you need me to dumb the staff from Middle Australia? It's pretty dumb already. You describe the main character as Wacko Jacko.
This has been a delight. Thank you. And thank you, Meredith, for those wonderful books and for those wonderful snacks. When we do this, when we pick this up again, because now I have time.
Far out. We've been talking for an hour. We got to wrap this up.
This is book writing time that I'm eating into, enjoying.
We appreciate it. Well, this is book promo.
That's true.
Actually, you know what? Can Fredwell Good Home be the official... when it comes out, can we be the official companion? Because you know how they do that? Like,
Instead, like, can we just market it as my book's audiobook, but it's just like... 18 hours of this podcast. Absolutely.
Or I could, can I do the audiobook of your book? I'll do it in a funny voice.
Uh-huh. Let me hear
Once Upon a Time! That's good.
Do you think my book starts with Once Upon a Time, by the way?
I imagine. Well, the editors haven't got to it yet, but sure. I imagine
they're going to be like, well, we've got to start it that way. Yeah, man. Sure.
Excellent. All right. Thank you very much for listening. Now that, we've got a bit more time, we'll do a couple more of these here and there. No classifieds this week, I guess.
Bye.